It's Friday, August 4th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show, presented by Toyota. It's a hell of a day to talk ball, and joining me to do just that, very excited, is Fantasy Points' Scott Barrett. Scott, what's going on, buddy?
What's up, man? Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
We've got a great episode here in front of us today. We're going to be talking about...
The best episode. Your best episode ever, I think.
I mean, I hope so, dude. I'm always trying to, you know, outkick my previous expectations. We've had some good ones this week here on, quote, Rankings Week. We're finishing it off talking today about the hardest players for us to rank. I'm going to throw some names out. Scott's going to throw some names out. But before we get to that, Scott, and before we get to anything, I do want to give you a chance here to talk about what you guys have going on at Fantasy Points, bro, because, you know, you gave me access to the data suite you guys have there. And, man, I rarely try to exaggerate my excitement, so I'm not exaggerating when I say this thing is pretty damn awesome.
Yeah, I know, man. I'm pretty good at, you know, self-promotion and marketing. So I've, you know, over the years, just like, this is the best thing ever. But like, this was actually the best thing ever. Yeah. So we launched this brand new data package, and, you know, for the average user, you know, you're going to find some utility from it. If you're like a stats nerd, like you and I are, like, you are going to go ape for this. We have access to like all of the best, most advanced data you can ask for, you know, fantasy points per dropback for quarterbacks, yards per route run, stats that other people don't even know ever existed, like, you know, first read target share. And then it's so customizable. Like, we have exponentially more data than any other company out there just because it's so customizable. You can filter for just about anything. You want to know what AJ Brown's yards per route run was in the fourth quarter in the red zone of dome games against cover two while the quarterback was under, and you can just go on and on and on. So really, this allows you to pull just about any piece of statistical information you could even think of. And this powers all of my research, and it's done that for a few years, really, I think, gives us a leg up. And the good news about this is it's pretty cheap. It's just $50 for year one. We're doing a free weekly trial, so you can test it out yourself. You can see if it lives up to my hype for it, and cancel before the seventh day. And so no charge to you. But yeah, check it out. I think everyone listening would think it's really cool.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I try to never go over the top when I'm saying something, and that is definitely like, I saw you guys all hyping it up. I was like, okay, we'll see how good this is. We'll see. And like, once I saw it, I was like, oh my God, they actually under promised. This is really great stuff. So I wanted my listeners on this show to get a chance to be familiar with it too, because I really think it'll help you with your weekly research this year. It's helped me a ton building projections. I mean, I've dropped the first read target share stat on this show multiple times already. It's just great stuff. And the customization of it is really cool too. So wanted the people to be familiar with that, Scott, and just, you know, again, congratulate you guys publicly for a bang up job on this whole thing.
Well, let me return the favor real quick. I was talking with Derek Brown over at Fantasy Pros, and he's like, if you can't make an argument for a player based on data, he's not a good player. And I was like, all right, there's one exception to this. There's one exception. Elijah Moore, just watch the tape. He is always open. Zach Wilson is just like neglecting him, or just like throwing to the worst possible spot, or missing him by a mile. And like, there's no, we have, you know, like catchable targets. We have data like that. But like, the only really good data for that is reception perception. And like, don't tell me I'm wrong and Elijah Moore sucked last year. But So, big, huge fan of your work as always. And of course, reception perception.
I will not tell you that, because it is not true. He was still really good last year. And man, I he was actually just on our previous episode in my five best ADPs out there right now is Elijah Moore. So hell, I'm really hoping for a bounce back from him this year. All right, Scott, enough of our, positivity towards each other. Let's talk news here for a second. We've only got one piece of thing to go over here before we get into the meat of the show. And it's that Ravens head coach John Harbaugh was talking yesterday and said he's unsure of when J.K. Dobbins will return to the team. Man, I mean, the Ravens always find a way to make things complicated from a health perspective. I just finished my, you know, rankings tiers and cheat sheet and everything like that. Just went through projections. I feel like, Scott, J.K. Dobbins is kind of setting up to be one of the riskier, like scarier fantasy picks to make right now? Where do you stand on J.K. Dobbins with this, you know, kind of kerfuffle that John Harbaugh caused yesterday?
Yeah, I'm just never really drafting him because, you know, I see a ton of risk. I don't see there's some reward there, but it's like, why not just draft Gus Edwards everywhere? Right? Yeah. He's free. J.K. Dobbins has missed more games than games he's played in his career. He's never once cleared a 66% snap share. He was always this committee back with like near even usage to Gus Edwards, who was like almost equally efficient, although not really. J.K. Dobbins, like one of the most efficient running backs when he's on the field and actually healthy. But yeah, like, is he holding out? Is he hurt? Does it even really matter? So right now I'm just drafting a lot of Gus Edwards. And then even just like from an ADP, like there's a point where he's going to be a value. I don't think his ADP has fallen there yet, but I'd rather, you know, take a gamble on like a Rashad Penny four rounds later, or maybe Khalil Herbert three rounds later, or something like that. They're kind of similar players to me.
Those two names are great to bring up and kind of continue the theme that we talked about with Rich Rebar a couple episodes ago about these like player archetypes and why that's important to keep in your mind. Because at first you think like, oh geez, J.K. Dobbins versus like Khalil Herbert or versus Rashad Penny, like I'd rather have J.K. Dobbins. But at the same time, when you strip back the name of the player and, you know, some of the like excitement that he has legitimately shown in the NFL, J.K. Dobbins is super efficient, like on a rushing perspective, but he's probably just an early down back, likely in a committee. He's not going to catch passes, and he's playing alongside a mobile quarterback. And you could say the exact same thing with Khalil Herbert. You could say the exact same thing about Rashad Penny. So those are actually two really good names to bring up.
No, I'm with you. I think that's what it is. And like with me, like with running backs historically, like I really gravitate towards the bell cows who get a high percentage of snaps, a high percentage of carries, and a high percentage of targets. And if you're in a PPR league, you know, maybe things just change dramatically because there is that regime change and that muddy situations. But yeah, I just don't see the upside, and I do see a lot of risk.
Yeah, that's the one thing I haven't bought into from the Ravens. Like, oh, we're changing our offense up. I do believe they're going to play faster. I do believe they're going to throw the ball more. I think the wide receivers will all be involved more. But the one headline that trickled out from minicamp, like, oh, we're going to throw to the running backs more. Eh, no, you're not. You're not going to throw to the running backs more. That's where I draw the line, okay? And we're doing everything differently from the Ravens offensive perspective. So glad to see we're on the same page there. And the bell cow stuff is all like in fantasy points data. So people should definitely, like, it is really important to make sure you're tuned into all of that.
Yeah, we've got a tool called the Bell Cow Report. A couple of days ago, Jonathan Gannon, the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals, said, we are 100% confident in James Conner to be your bell cow. And if you look at snap share by weeks, he was one of... there were only seven instances last year of a running back clearing a 95% snap share. He had four of those. So, you know, he's probably not as talented as J.K. Dobbins, maybe similar injury risk, honestly, but just at ADP value, especially because he's heavily involved in the passing game, or has been historically, he's a player I'd much rather own for fantasy.
Yeah, I actually have him ranked one spot ahead of J.K. Dobbins, James Conner, and it's like well ahead of where he's going. And it's so funny because he just epitomizes why the bell cow stuff really matters, because he's so boring, right? I actually think James Conner's a little underrated as a player, but he hasn't been like super efficient and all that. But you even look at the depth chart this year, Scott, and I know he can get into trouble with doing this type of stuff with running backs, but like, it's not as if they signed some, even like a Kareem Hunt or something, who's obviously not on the team right now. They didn't sign like anybody that would potentially threaten his touches either. Like, it's Keontae Ingram, a holdover from the last staff. It's like Corey Clement, who's been like a special teamer for the most part. He should just moonwalk into another bell cow season. So he kind of epitomizes the, oh yeah, you waited for your running back too. Like, keep on waiting and just get James Conner, who profiles so perfectly as that bell cow.
I mean, this guy averaged over 20 fantasy points per game over his last seven games last year. And like, everyone is forgetting about it. I'm seeing on the timeline people hyping up Keontae Ingram and Mari DeMarcado. Like, when you're hyping up names like that, just draft James Conner, please, please.
Absolutely. We're on the same page there. All right. It's fantasy draft season, and we all want to build the perfect team to dominate our friends, family, and coworkers. So for this week's Build Your Team, courtesy of Toyota Racing, we are tackling this major fantasy debate. Scott, it's always debated in the industry, like, should you target a player's floor or should you target the player's ceiling? You've been really bullish on this over the last few years. You write an article that called Upside Wins Championships, and you talk about why you should almost always only care about a player's bull case projection versus their median or base projection, right? So tell the people why they should only, or mostly at least, care about upside.
Yeah, I think a lot of people think like the way to win fantasy is to just like draft the best ADP beaters. And it's like, the example I always use was like, oh, James White is being drafted as the RB32 and he's going to finish as the RB22. So he's a great, it's like the RB22 is like meaningless. It's like, doesn't bring any value to your team over your opponents. And it's, and like when you're like trying to figure out who's a value, who's not, it's not that median projection, like you just said. And the bear case projection at a certain point is like irrelevant. It's all about upside. Upside literally wins championships. In any given season, there might only be like 8 players who actually matter for fantasy. Like in 2019, it was like you had Lamar Jackson and Christian McCaffrey. You had like an 80% chance of making it to your championship round. Those are like 2 of only 6 players who actually mattered. They're what I call power law players. And so like, you're really good at this. Everyone in the industry is really good at this. It's like, okay, you look at a player, you weigh the pros and cons. What is their risk? What is their potential out? And like the only difference between me and a lot of the other names out there is just like, what is a player's down? Like, I just don't care. Like, what is Justin Ross's downside? Like, I don't, it's meaningless in round 17. What's his upside is like, he was the alpha on a Clemson offense that had Pro Bowl wide receivers and Hunter Renfrow and T. Higgins. And he was the youngest. He was supposed to be the next Larry Fitzgerald, the top 10 pick. And like, there is incomparable upside when you get to that ADP range. And you could do that for a lot of players. It's like, you really want those highest end producers. When I'm drafting a tight end, all I'm thinking about is what is their percentage likelihood of finishing top 5 in fantasy points per game. If I draft a tight end 11 and he finishes as the tight end 9, that's not even really a win. Like I'm shooting for upside. In fantasy football, 2 nickels are never worth a dime. You really want those stud. So I'm swinging for the fences. I'm an Adam Dunn type swinger. Like, give me a bunch of strikeouts and home runs, because in best ball, it's different. But in a start sit league, you will always have the waiver wire to fall back on.
I love that. And Justin Ross is a great name to bring up because, yeah, he has a huge injury history. But who cares, because of the cost benefit analysis of it? There's such a high ceiling there if he is the guy that he was, you know, probably not his last year at Clemson, but, you know, the few years earlier. And he's obviously playing with Patrick Mahomes. Besides Justin Ross, are there any other kind of like bigger names that you think sort of epitomize this theory?
Yeah. Also, that last season for Justin Ross, he had a fractured foot.
Exactly.
Yeah. But like the entire season. Yeah. There's a lot of players like that. Justin Ross is definitely like the guy. I got another one too. Like I'm scared to even mention it. It's like Kadarius Toney. The chances of the Chiefs being as productive as they were with Patrick Mahomes and not having one wide receiver finished top 12 in fantasy points per game and another one finished as a high end wide receiver 2 is like so improbable. It's like such an outlier season in that regard, even with Travis Kelce being, you know, as dominant as a wide receiver 1 as he is. It's just so like, yeah, give me these guys like Kadarius Toney, like massive headache off the field. He can't stay healthy. But earlier in the offseason, they like, Brett Veach, who's not a liar. Brett Veach, when Patrick Mahomes heading into his sophomore season only had one NFL start under his belt, Brett Veach was like, you guys aren't going to believe me, but this is the best football player I've ever seen in practices. Like, he is blowing my mind. And then he had one of the best years ever. And he was saying that about Kadarius Toney. He was saying like, I think this is our new Tyreek Hill. I think he can run the deep routes. I think he can... With Mahomes too, there's also like, he averages 14 shovel pass touchdowns per game. And so like, he's this elite missed tackles guy and after the catch guy. So I think he has that floor to like eat, to be like Mecole Hardman on steroids as a gadget guy. But I know you disagree with me on this one. So why don't you tell me I'm an insane person for wanting to draft Kadarius, who's already injured, by the way.
Right, who is already injured. And I think, though, that sort of really brings one of the things I think about when talking about like upside win championships and mostly focusing on the bull case of these players is that you also should bake in the possibility that you're wrong when there is a lot of upside present. For me, obviously, like you said, I don't think that Kadarius Toney has shown anything to this point to think he can consistently run routes as an outside receiver against press man coverage. I think there's a lot of work that needs to go into that. A lot of work that might not be putting into it, you know, and again, especially because he can't consistently stay on the field, but there's a chance that I'm wrong. So is that value proposition there important in drafts to remember, considering now he's going even later than he used to? And I think that's sort of where we come back to like the upside wins championships thing. Like if we're talking about him as like a really falling down the board and not being like the 39th receiver off the board or something like that, that's only presenting more and more upside. There's the obvious downside to it, but really, yeah, you're right. Who cares about the downside?
I get a few more for you. I think Michael Thomas is like a perfect example where it's like, okay, he probably gets hurt. But like, what if he doesn't? Like his last full season, he set the NFL record in receptions. He came back the next year, wasn't healthy at all, was on a limited snap share, and he averaged like 110 yards per four quarters with Taysom Hill at QB last year. You know, he was putting up wide receiver one numbers, playing only on like 70% of the snaps. Christian Watson is like really one of like just love the talent. But then like I want you to know it's not just like the boom or bust archetype. Like Keenan Allen is like glaringly one of my must draft wide receivers. And like for a lot of people, he's boring, but he's being drafted what, wide receiver 18 on Yahoo? And it's like he's finished as a fantasy wide receiver one in seven straight seasons. So it's like that's just a no-brainer to me, where that's high ceiling. I would call that high ceiling and high floor and just like an obscene value.
All right. So there you have it. Whether you're on the field, on the track, or building your fantasy roster, you've got to get a great team around you. That was Build Your Team. Thanks again to our friends at Toyota Racing. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Scott and I are going to give you some of our hardest players to rank with the widest range of outcomes that we can see on the board right now, right after this. All right, if you haven't already, be sure to check out the rest of our Rankings Week conversations, whether you listen to them or you watch the podcast, because you can do that on YouTube now. I mean, who doesn't want to see Scott and I's beautiful faces talking about this? To conclude Rankings Week today, Scott, we're going to name some of the hardest players for us to rank and guys who we think have like the widest range of outcomes. I've got a big list. You've got a big list. We'll just kick it around back and forth. And hopefully, you know, maybe we'll change each other's minds on some of these things. So why don't you start off with one of your hardest players to rank?
Yeah, so I don't know if I understood the assignment perfectly. I wouldn't say this player has like the widest range of outcomes, but he is like one of the hardest players for me to rank, and that's Aaron Jones. Mm-hmm. So up until like about a season and a half ago, he was never what I would call a bell cow. He was like 50% carry share, but he would rank top five in route share and target share in PPR leagues. Targets are worth 2.5 times as much as a carry. So like, that's more important to me. But then he was a bell cow in the red zone. In the red zone, his snap share would jump from like 50% to 90%. And then you saw that he had 19 touchdowns in 2019. He had 11 touchdowns in 2020. But then halfway through 2021, he really ceded the bulk of that work to AJ Dillon. Last year, AJ Dillon had five times as many carries inside the 5 yard line. They were basically even in carries per game. And even like targets, like people were hyping up Aaron Jones to be the wide receiver one of the Packers. He only averaged like 4.1 targets per game. And so to me, like Jones is like, I mean, this is indisputable. You look at the numbers, Jones is one of the most efficient touchdown scorers of all time. So it doesn't make sense to me that you would take that role away from him when AJ Dillon he's been mediocre at best. And I've seen Green Bay beat writers, I think it was Aaron Nagler, talk about this, where he said, this is something Jones is not happy about. Like he misses that near end zone work. He likes being the guy who scores touchdowns. And so he's so difficult to rank because like, that's what the entirety of, you know, my projection for him is like touchdowns are worth 60 rushing. You're like, that's so valuable, so important. And it's like, what should they do? They should just let Jones be that bell cow near the end zone. What will they do? I have no idea. And so that's why he's so tricky to me.
I think he's a great name to start this off with. Andy brought him up last episode about how he's really bullish on him at ADP. And I was in on Aaron Jones last year. And the thing, I love that you brought up like the, oh, he was going to be the wide receiver one point. I think we all need to kind of, and I'm talking to myself here too, because I've made this mistake previously. I think we all need to kind of come to a realization here that if you're running back, number one is not named Christian McCaffrey, but if your running back is like your number one targeted player and your number one receiver, your offense probably sucks, or at very least is like well under expectations. It's just really hard to build a passing game out of a running back, again, who's not Christian McCaffrey. I mean, look, no shade to Austin Eckler, our guy here on the show, but like he was the central pass catcher of that team last year, and he consistently voiced frustration about it on this podcast because he's like, yo, receivers should be catching passes. Like, I shouldn't be catching all of these passes. So and we obviously know the Chargers offense was under expectations last year. So I struggle with Aaron Jones too, because I think you can project him for a decent bit of workload here, but it does come down to the touchdown part. And I don't know, Scott, maybe there is some solace to take in the fact that like they brought him back, you know, they easily could have just moved on from him as like an older veteran back or whatever. They probably still want to be run focused, but I don't know. I love him here because he is definitely a difficult. Wouldn't say he has a wide range of outcomes or anything. Like, does he have the ceiling to be like a top five fantasy back? I don't know.
He's done
not.
It before. Granted, like with a different quarterback and a different offense. But yeah, just to me, like he like really stood out because like I have him like RB16 right now, and so like if he's the exact same role he had last year, like that's a bad pick because he just doesn't have. Mm-hmm. RB1 upside. But like if he goes back to that role, like he's had top five fantasy point per game finishes, and then like my subscribers are like, you're an idiot, you had Aaron Jones. I just have no control over the usage. I have no idea what it's going to be, but there is that glimmer of hope that the beat writers are saying he's complained about it.
Yeah, I like that. I'll stick on the same team for my first player. And it's someone that you mentioned in the Upside Wins Championship, like a little discussion we just had. And I totally understand why. It's Christian Watson, who, you know, right now consensus ADP is wide receiver 23, 51st overall player. Depends on the platform you look at, like where exactly he's going to go. But he's like a round six pick. I actually don't hate that at all. And I don't have him ranked like well under consensus or anything like that. But I think he's a difficult player to rank just because I do have questions about the overall skill set. Like I know from a per route perspective, he was awesome. And like you look at the routes he excels on, and this probably perfectly bleeds into like what we should care about based on what you just said in the last segment, the routes he's successful on, like in reception perception, it's all the routes that really, really matter. Nine routes, post routes, corner routes, deep out routes. He does some good work out in space, like on flat routes and stuff like that. He does definitely need to get better on base, what I would call like base NFL routes, like dig routes, curl routes, slant routes, especially against man coverage. But I'm not like I'm struggling with how much emphasis I need to put on that because of where he wins is so important. I do think I like Jaden Reed as a player, but you know, he is a rookie, most likely slot receiver. I'm not a huge Romeo Doubs fan. Like their rookie tight end is probably going to be their clear runaway starter. How much are we just talked about the running backs in the passing game. And obviously I haven't even said the name Jordan Love yet, right? Like there is a question about how good is his quarterback. I don't know, Scott, help me out with like Christian Watson, because I see all the good. I think I see more downside than most people, but I can't quite figure out if I want to be in line with consensus, ahead of consensus, or if I want to be a little bit below here.
So I loved him as a prospect. I was like one of the highest people in the industry on him. 2021 averaged like 4.33 yards per route run. That ranks seventh best in PFF college history. So since 2014, granted it was in the FCS. So I really like the prospect, and I'm not a tape guy. Like you are way better at film than I am by far. But I loved the tape. My comp for him coming out was if Randy Moss were mortal. That was the sort of upside I saw for it, just because like his ability to take a short dump off and then just house it running circles around the opposing defense. Love the upside inherent to him. And then what did we see from him as a rookie? I saw just about all good. It was one of the best, most predictive stats is yards per route run as a rookie. He had one of the top 10 best seasons ever on like a stacked list. There's only absolute studs on that list. By touchdown adjusted yards per route run, it was the fifth best ever season behind only these names: OBJ, AJ Brown, Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson. And that gets me extremely excited. People talk about the incoming touchdown regression because there's that like 4 week span where he scored like 8 touchdowns on 12 touches, which is not sustainable. But like by my numbers, by expected touchdowns, he's actually not really a touchdown regression, like not as much as a lot of other names, because he led in XTD per opportunity, ranked top three in deep target rate, top three in percentage of targets coming inside the 10 yard line. So he's actually just getting like really valuable volume on like a per target basis. And then it's like inherent to the archetype, or like what I saw on film was like, if Randy Moss were mortal, like his ability to just like house these short dump offs to like make obscene catches, the elite speed as a deep threat. I definitely had concerns. I thought he played a lot smaller than he was in terms of contested targets. I thought he had like among the worst hands in the class coming out. But you're the film guy, so like maybe you can have me check my expectations here a little bit.
I mean, my comp for him coming into the league was Martavis Bryant, which is basically, I think, if Randy Moss was mortal, is like what Martavis Bryant would have been in the NFL had he been.
He's the one miss on that top 15 yards per route runs from a rookie, by the way. He's the only miss.
But like, what would have happened if Martavis Bryant didn't have, you know, like quote off the field troubles and all that stuff?
Exactly.
Right. Like, would he still be like, I think he'd still be a highly productive player.
He was so sick as a rookie.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. Unbelievable. I definitely remember people like, is Martavis Bryant better than Antonio Brown? It's like, well, no, but he is a perfect complement across from Antonio. Mm-hmm. Antonio Brown has made a lot of like young receivers look better than they are, like Juju Smith-Schuster. Anyways, like, I think that's a perfect comp for him as a player. And I guess my thing is there. Well, let me ask you this question. If Christian Watson was going into year two with all the things we just mentioned, both good and bad, a lot of good, and Aaron Rodgers was still the quarterback, where do you think he would be like in consensus ADP? Do you think he'd be like up in the Chris Olave tier, like Jalen Waddle, Devonta Smith, that group?
I think he'd be above where Garrett Wilson is right now. Garrett Wilson is wide receiver 9 on Yahoo. Yeah. I think he'd be right there in that Amon-Ra at Devontae Adams range, maybe right before Wilson, Waddle, Olave, Higgins.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. And so for that reason, that's kind of why I don't want to sit here and say like I'm fading Christian Watson or something like that, even though I do have a little bit of just questions about his overall skill set, because the role he's going to play, he's very, very good in that. The routes that he's going to run, he's very, very good at those routes. And then I think that is baking in enough uncertainty with the quarterback situation. Do you have like a Jordan Love take? Because since we're just talking about two Packers, do you like have any kind of lean into how you expect him to play this year?
I've got absolutely nothing. Except as it relates to Christian Watson. And it's just that Jordan Love had 195 yards as a passer last season. Christian Watson made up 103 of that. Like we at least saw like one or two plays.
And Scott, report. I think what's really important with the Christian Watson thing is Christian Watson did, I would say, like 70% of the work on that, you know, because it was that one big crossing route against the Eagles where it's like, oh, Jordan Love, all he had to do was just, you know, hit him in stride. And then, like we've been saying, Christian Watson houses it. Mm-hmm. So that's important, too.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, I don't think he's great, but I mean, like I don't see a lot of target competition. So
yeah.
I see just based on that, a pretty high floor and then like a really high ceiling, just on talent.
All right. Love it. I think I know how a little bit better how I feel about Christian Watson now after this conversation. So give me another one of your like hardest players to rank.
Well, we could stick with, Green Bay adjacent players. Aaron Rodgers is another one. And so like, he's tough for me to rank. Not because there's a wide range of outcomes, but because I'm a little bit skeptical of his league winning potential. Remember, mm-hmm. I'm the upside wins championship guy. So that's what matters to me. But like you can make a really persuasive bull case argument for him. And that's that his last two seasons with Nathaniel Hackett, he won MVP. His last two seasons without a broken thumb, he won league MVP. He had a broken thumb from week I don't know, four on and like clearly didn't look right. This is a stacked receiving core. This is the craziest stat I found. I like tweet it out every week because it constantly blows my mind. But over the last two seasons, the Jets lead the league in passing yards per game in games Zach Wilson was inactive. In games Zach Wilson started, they were second to last. You know, there was some game script things going on there, but like, okay, that's insane. And again, love the receiving core. Offensive line is a little sus, but I still believe in his talent. The question to me is, and by the way, like he just cleared his salary. So like making this even murkier is like, there's now a 16% chance the Jets trade for Davante Adams before the trade deadline. Like, where would you take Rodgers if you knew with 100% certainty they'd add Davante Adams in week six? And so, yeah, it's just the counter argument is like, okay, he won league MVP, but he finished what, seventh the last time he won it, fourth the year before that. He's not a hyper mobile quarterback, but he's a player where I want to bet him for league MVP. So like, why shouldn't I be drafting it?
I think the construction of this roster, he's going to have a pretty thin margin for error in terms of him being like a top five fantasy quarterback. Cause I'm with you that, I mean, I love Garrett Wilson. I think Garrett Wilson has superstar potential, but I think that like Alan Lazard is a solid role player. I think Corey Davis is a solid role player. He's like a fringe number two receiver. I think Alan Lazard's probably a decent three. The tight end room is, you know, it's fine. It's fine. I think if they still had our guy Elijah Moore, then I'd be a lot more excited about this team's passing potential. But
hell yeah.
I see them as like a solid passing unit, a team that's going to run the ball really well. And they're going to play, like, I do think they're one of these defenses that typically we've seen, oh, like, all right, this team has a great defense. It's going to regress year over year, but they weren't really like a turnover heavy defense last year. They were just really good at stopping the opposing offense. And you could not really say that about the Packers defenses the last few years. They've really been struggling to figure out that side of the ball, despite throwing a ton of first round picks at it. So I just feel like Aaron Rodgers can be great for the Jets this year. He can be like exactly what they need, and he can get Garrett Wilson to where Garrett Wilson needs to go from like an ADP perspective. And then he would still be like at best quarterback 12. So he's not really like a guy I've been proactively targeting, but if I'm really punting the position, I need like a QB2 that I think can have some spike weeks. He's like fine in that scenario.
No, I think that's the perfect counter argument. Yeah. You know, really good defense. And you know, the stats I listed with, you know, with, without Zach Wilson, that wasn't with Hackett, who's like historically pretty run heavy, and they're trying to add Dalvin Cook now. So, you know, there's an implication there. So I think that was a really good counter from you.
Okay. Let me give you another one here. I'll go with Antonio Gibson of the Washington Commanders. Look, everybody's had their thing with Antonio Gibson in fantasy, right? Like everybody's had an Antonio Gibson moment. I went into this being like, all right, I'm not going to do the Antonio Gibson thing again. I don't care that the headline is definitely going to come in training camp. And by the way, the headline did come in training camp that, oh, Antonio Gibson's going to be in the JD McKissick role. He's going to be catching passes and stuff like that. I really like Brian Robinson as a prospect. I thought he played really well last year after he got shot in the freaking leg. I thought I'd be really in on Brian Robinson. I don't dislike Brian Robinson, but then like, again, you go through projections, you look at how like Eric Bieniemy's offenses have played in Kansas City. And I get it's hard to pull him apart from Andy Reid and everything like that. Gibson's just going to come out looking pretty good. If you just do like league wide projections, you project him for, you know, a decent bit of target share. You project him even for like a 29% share of the team carries. He's been a relatively like efficient touchdown scorer. So I've struggled to find like where to place these Washington Commander backs in my rankings. Cause I don't really want to draft like Antonio Gibson, but he shows up pretty well. And I do think that my big thing here is that I'm in on this offense taking a step this year. Cause I love the three receivers and I think Sam Howell can be, you know, pretty intriguing.
Yeah. I'll be honest. I have absolutely no interest. Because Ron Rivera has told us, Eric Bieniemy has told us that they want a three-way committee backfield. They said after drafting Chris Rodriguez, like Bieniemy loves him. He's obsessed about him. We had round three grades on him. He has like a clear role in mind for him in year one. I just interviewed Chris a couple of days ago. Like he said, basically the same thing. You know, he's going to get some play. He's already getting a ton of play with the first team offense. And so to me, it's just like, okay, let's say he's the JD McKissick role, right? Like, when has JD McKissick ever been a needle mover for fantasy? I just don't see any upside for any running back in a three-way committee in a bad offense. So like, where to put these guys in your rankings is hard. I don't even have them in my rankings. Like, I'm just not drafting them ever because I just don't see the upside.
I mean, this is a great exercise for like the upside wins championship stuff, because again, if you involve Chris Rodriguez at all in your projections, like immediately I just did it. And like, now I don't want any part of this backfield. And so that's a great piece of intel there. And why, like, all right, yeah, if you're struggling to rank Antonio Gibson, just remember that Chris Rodriguez is going to be involved in some way. And now I don't have to think about these running backs. And I can, again, just focus on Terry McLaurin, Jahan Dotson, and Curtis Samuel, who I love all three of those players.
Right. Right. All right. My guy.
Yeah. Give me another one of yours.
Tony Pollard. I think this is like a perfect example where it's like, my favorite stat is expected fantasy points, XFP, like, which measures the value of your volume. Last season, Tony Pollard was outsnapped by Ezekiel Elliott. Ezekiel Elliott had better volume, but measured by XFP. Pollard ranked 21st in XFP per game. By fantasy points per game, he ranked, I don't know, eighth. Like, that never happens. That sort of split is insane. And like, this implies he's one of the most efficient running backs in fantasy. And like, that's just about always been true, like on a per touch basis, insane efficiency. And so now we're looking at a Dallas offense that, you know, saying you want to be really run heavy. Ezekiel Elliott's not there. If Pollard captures just 50% of Ezekiel Elliott's now vacated XFP, we should expect him to score at least 20 fantasy points per game. If he captures, you know, 70% of it, it should be 23 fantasy points. And it's like, this guy has massive league winning potential. It just, all it comes down to is like, how much volume is he going to get? And that's not something we have any control over. Bucky Brooks in, I want to say May, I was listening to his podcast and he was like, yeah, you know, I talked to my guys at the Dallas front office and I'm like, how come you never give Tony Pollard more than 15 touches per game? And they said, yeah, we don't ever want to give him anything more than 15 touches per game because we think that saps him of his explosive ability. We think that, you know, makes him more injury prone. And like, so like, you give him more touches, but then you lose the explosive runs elsewhere. And like, I think that's BS, because like, what has happened every time Ezekiel Elliott has sat out is like, Pollard gets 22 touches and he scores 54 fantasy points. So I think that's dumb, but it's, you know, Sig Bloom always says, you know, it's the assumption of rational coaching. It's not what they should do. It's what are they going to do? And like, Mike McCarthy to me is an all-time donkey who, like, you remember we were talking Aaron Jones, like Aaron Jones that one year averaged 5.5 yards per carry.
Oh, yeah.
Jamal Williams averaged 3.8 and they were even in carries. It's like, what are you doing? So, but still, like, I think that, like, even if he's in the exact same role and he's just as efficient as he was last year, which is a pretty big if, that's a fantasy RB1. So he's been super tricky for me.
I hear you about this, and it's funny looking at like the expected fantasy points per game on your guys' data suite. Like, he's right there with Miles Sanders and like Brian Robinson. And I think that's kind of like for him to be Miles Sanders last year, he just has to run really hot in a really good environment. And like, what I can see him running really hot in this environment, right? Like, let's hope they get Zach Martin in the fold. I mean, my God, Jerry, give me a break. Like, talking about just, this is one of those players, Zach Martin, that's just like, dude, you just do it. He wants more money. He wants to get up from like the eighth highest paid guard or whatever to the top. You do it. Okay. Just go ahead and get that done. So let's assume that that works out and it's fine. The offensive line is good. Zach Martin's in the fold. He's one of the best guards to ever play. Boom. I think the defense is going to be really good this year. Talked about that all week long, that like how that could actually keep like a ceiling on the passing game a little bit, because they're going to be in these like consistently positive run heavy game scripts. And he just needs to score, be efficient and score touchdowns, which is what Miles Sanders did last year with the Eagles. So I don't know, that Aaron Jones example is really good though, that, you know, I could see him being like an Aaron Jones moment for an Aaron Jones guy for Mike McCarthy, And I'm trying to look at just what season was that particularly that we're talking about? Like his
was that 2018? I think it was his sophomore season.
Yeah, 2018, 5.5 yards per carry, 728 yards, 8 touchdowns, 133 carries overall, 26 catches on 35 targets. Like, I think Pollard will have more than 133 carries for sure. But it's like, I guess Scott, the thing I get hung up on here too is, who's the Jamal Williams in this scenario? Is it Malik Davis? Is it Rico Dowd? It's not going to be Deuce Vaughn. Deuce Vaughn is like, I don't know, like, you guys probably weigh the same, you and Deuce Vaughn. So like, what are we doing
here? Damn, I'm catching strays.
Hey, Deuce Vaughn's a tiny guy. I'm trying to give you a compliment here. I knew I couldn't do myself because I'm like, I probably I've got a lot of weight and a lot of height on Deuce Vaughn. So no shade to Deuce Vaughn though.
I think Pollard has legitimate overall RB1 upside. It's just like, if he gets the volume he should get and remains as efficient, he's also like a great pass catcher, unlike who you mentioned, Miles Sanders. 55 mm-hmm. targets last year, really efficient in that role. But yeah, it's like, what do we think Mike McCarthy's like? Do we think he's smart? I don't. So who's the other guy? I think it's Zeke. I think the re-sign Zeke, or the re-sign, you know, Fournette, who's basically Zeke, or the Kareem Hunt, who's basically Zeke. But we'll see.
Yeah. If no move happens, I'm just going to like set Tony Pollard as my RB6 and be like, you need to take this guy. When you get into the second round, he's there. You need to just go ahead and take him. So I think that's how I'm probably going to approach this. But yeah, if they'd sign Zeke again, it's I'm not going to say it's all over, but it's not great.
I am 6 inches taller than Deuce Vaughn. I weigh 30 pounds less. Damn. that is a squatty individual.
Yeah. Well, he's shining in these, like, you know, padless practices and stuff like that.
Of course he is.
As you would expect. All right. I'll give you another one of mine here. And it's another running back. And like, I mean, my God, I can guarantee that you're not going to like this player. And I'm not sure that I like him either. Najee Harris, Pittsburgh Steelers. Here's the dumb part about me, Scott. I just wrote this article for the site. One of the dumb parts about me is that I really like the Steelers passing game. I kind of think, and I hate Matt Canada's offense. It's my least favorite designed offense in the entire NFL. I think their route combinations, you're just drawn dead against cover two. Like, it's really poorly designed for the current NFL when all these teams are running zone coverage and all these teams are playing these like kind of two high shells. Terrible for that. But I think there's a decent chance they're more pass heavy than they were last year. I think Kenny Pickett, I don't know what his ceiling is, but he showed he could play off script last year. Deontay Johnson's one of my favorite route runners, even if he's got like kind of high on the bonehead play scale. I think he's got potential to outkick his ADP. George Pickens, I have questions about his overall skill set, but I do think he can be a really nice vertical X receiver. I like Pat Freiermuth as a tight end, and nobody wants to hear it, but Allen Robinson's a good fit as their big slot receiver. Like, those guys are all interesting to me, but the player that goes earliest, I don't really like want any part of Najee Harris. Is that stupid? I don't know where to slot him in my rankings, but right now I've got him like kind of running back 14-ish. And, you know, he goes running back 12-ish, 30th overall, which just kind of means like, if I'm drafting off my list, I'm probably never going to get him.
Yeah. So I think he's the perfect example. I really like Deontay Johnson too, by the way, 4th in targets over the last 3 seasons. Like, that's an easy value to me. But yeah, so Najee has easily been one of the least efficient running backs in fantasy over the last 2 seasons, but his volume has been elite as a rookie, pretty good to really good last year. And like, you can make an argument, he wasn't even bad last year. He was just injured. He suffered a Lisfranc sprain in training camp, but from week 11 on, he ranked 8th in fantasy points per game, 8th in XFP per game. The one counter argument there is like, he only played 64% of the snaps from week 11 on. Mike Tomlin, who's like always been the bell cow guy, is no longer in charge of the running backs. He gave that to his running back coach, who's been hyping up Jaylen Warren quite a bit, kind of like hinting at a committee. So I'm out on him just for that. But like, if you want to make the argument that, hey, they have all this draft capital tied to him, hey, he was hurt last year, this has always been a hyper valuable role to target for fantasy Pittsburgh running backs, get a ton of volume. I get it. I'm just out on him primarily just because the running back coach now controls usage and has been hyping up Jaylen Warren.
I think I can tell myself a story which, you know, you're getting yourself into trouble when you start it that way. Because I don't even know if I believe this story, by the way. But I think I could tell myself a story where, okay, I like the offense to take a step. I think these pass catchers are good. I think Matt Canada can get out of the way a little bit here. And I kind of think that, like, okay, limiting his touches might, with Jaylen Warren being involved, actually could be a good thing, because they're not just like grinding him into the dust on these inefficient ways with Najee Harris. And I want backs that I think are attached to offenses that could take a step. But yeah, there's just something about like all of the warning signs here that kind of have me being like, all right, even if I believe that this offense can take a step and Matt Canada can get out of the way, which are two big ifs, by the way, then I'm not sure that I still even want any part of the grinder back here.
Yeah, I'm with you.
All right, give me another one of yours here.
That would be Breece Hall. And I don't know if it's like that tricky for me, or just like I'm scared to actually rank him where I want to rank him, but he's 9 months removed from a torn ACL and a torn meniscus. Track record on these sorts of running backs is not great, whether it's a decline in efficiency the following season or a higher rate of compensatory injuries. For 2 years now, Robert Saleh has told us he wants a running back by committee. Nathaniel Hackett is a running back by committee sort of guy. They tried to draft Jahmyr Gibbs in round one, pick number 15 overall. Breece Hall went round two. Now they're trying to sign Dalvin Cook. The counter arguments to this is like, one, he's really good. I think he's awesome. I think he's sick. Two is like, I think this offense is going to be awesome for fantasy, and the defense is great, so that's great game script. I think like even if he's at like 60% effectiveness, he could just like fall into the end zone like 14 times. So there's definitely value there. But I think at his ADP, he's someone I'm pretty out on.
I struggle with him too, because I think he is a great like upside win. Don't you think? I think he's like a great upside wins championships guy.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like he's great and the offense is great. There's clearly upside there.
Yeah. And we think that the defense is going to be good. The run heavy game scripts, he makes a lot of sense there. And, I actually kind of hope they do sign Dalvin Cook, just so that his ADP will come down a little bit. But that does freak me out a little bit. And the Jahmyr Gibbs stuff does like worry me too, that they wanted to draft Jahmyr Gibbs. Like, what are we doing here? I mean, I know Gibbs is like going to be more of a receiving weapon. That's what everybody says. Allegedly, that's always a talking point with that like type, that archetype of back. But like, my God, like Breece Hall last year from like an air yards per target perspective was lapping the field with other running backs. He was like prime David Johnson is always my comparison for what Breece Hall was doing as a receiver last year in terms of getting downfield targets. This guy could be that type of receiving weapon, I would think, at least based on what he was doing last year with like Zach Wilson at quarterback, for God's sake. So I struggle with Breece Hall too, because I want to draft him and like not care about what he's going to look like early in the season and all this stuff. But I've also kind of trying to talk myself into, don't just care about the end of the year. I know that's like what's going to matter in terms of like winning championships and winning best ball tournaments and all that stuff. But like, I'd ideally not like to spend, you know, what are we talking here with Breece Hall? Like the 29th overall pick, 23rd overall pick in Yahoo on a guy that's going to not get off to a good start to the season.
Yeah. I love the, David Johnson mentioned. Yeah. I've always said like, air yards don't matter at all for running backs, except for those two seasons from David Johnson and last year from Breece Hall. Like, you nailed it. Like, that was an obscene year by usage, like actually getting wide receiver routes and doing pretty well with it. But like, and the volume was great. Like, if you look at the volume, he had 23 opportunities in week four, 22 the next week, 22 the next week, but he was still like 51%, 66%, 67%, 67% snap share. And so he was still kind of a committee with, you know, guys who aren't good, guys who didn't do anything when he missed time. So I do think like a Dalvin signing would be a death knell. I also think Dalvin's like the least cooked of these free agent running backs. He had a really bad shoulder injury and another injury. And he said, he like lost confidence. He wasn't as physical as he typically was. But yeah, again, I don't really have a good take here. That's just like the variables at play. And I struggle to kind of, you know, plant a flag and have a firm ranking on him.
All right, here for my next one, I'll go super boring. And this is actually a player you and I talked about really quickly when we were going over the fantasy points data suite a couple weeks ago. Juju Smith-Schuster. This is why I struggle with this one, because if you think about it just from like a on paper perspective, you know, he was not great in fantasy last year with Patrick Mahomes, who's, you know, the best quarterback going right now and might be the best quarterback to ever play the game. And, you know, now he's in New England. Gross. I mean, I don't need to tell you why that's gross. He's also not had like a clean off season of health, everything like that. Then again, you think about just they signed him, I think, to be in the Jacoby Myers role, which I don't agree with. I think Jacoby Myers is a better player, but I also don't think Juju's terrible. I think he can't beat press man coverage, but he's probably going to be their big slot receiver. And he is a really good zone beater. He's like a smart zone beater underneath, tough physical guy, can make some plays after the catch, whatever. But his primary stuff is, again, going to be running crossing routes, curl routes, just over the middle stuff. He's a limited player. But still, if you just stick him in this New England offense, even if they're very, very run heavy and they play very, very slow, he's still going to moonwalk into what, like 100, 100, 1920 targets. And when you do that, it's like, oh God, he's going to come out like 10, 12 spots where he's going ahead of ADP. And I don't know if I want that. So I think you're the perfect person to tell me, like, yo, dude, there's no upside here. Just draft like Zay Flowers or, you know, Quentin Johnson or something like that instead.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Like, if you're in a best ball league, maybe like not even an underdog tournament league, like a Yahoo 12 team non-tournament, like you can make the case like, oh, he's going to beat his ADP. There's a guaranteed however many targets. But yeah, from like a redraft start sit perspective, no interest. I just like not worth my time, like writing him up or even putting him in my rankings. I just don't see that he couldn't get it done as the wide receiver one. For Mahomes, like, what's he going to do with the Patriots, who sucked last year? I know Bill O'Brien's there, but whatever. Yeah. Also, like, just the player, he's good at finding the soft spot in zones, but like, he has worse knees than you'll find in my grandmother's nursing home. Like, is he cooked? I think he might be cooked.
Yeah, he was incredibly overrated after his second season, which I said consistently at the time. And like, now, yeah, again, I think he's just like a fine player. So that's great for me to have you on to tell me that, because I'm not even a big Juju guy. And just like thinking the fact that, okay, he goes off the board wide receiver 48, he's going to outkick wide receiver 48, mm-hmm. but who gives a damn if he outkicks mm-hmm. wide receiver 48? It just really doesn't matter. That's a great
Yeah, player. Wide receiver 38 finished, like, doesn't move the needle. That's a guy like you're never confident starting. And if you're starting him, you're probably losing ground in your opponent. So yeah, I think that's a great example.
Yeah, like when I just put my cheat sheet together or whatever, like putting my rankings together, it's like, okay, he comes out. Wow, like from a projection standpoint, like he comes out, you know, ahead of guys like Elijah Moore, Quentin Johnson, Traylon Burks. But who cares? Who cares? But we're still going to go behind him. Okay, that's the difference between like rankings and projections. Like, you're not taking Juju Smith-Schuster over those guys, even like Rashad Bateman and Zay Flowers, who I love both those players, and there's obvious risks with Rashad Bateman, but like, the upside is there for him, I think, to be I almost thought about including him on this list just because I love the player so much. I love the situation, but God, he's just like, is he going to be the third receiver to start the year? At this way, it's kind of trending that direction.
Yeah, I think those are two good examples too. I see upside there. I kind of like those guys.
Okay, you got any more you want to do before we get out of here? There's only one more I definitely want to run by you before.
Yeah, I get a great one for you. This is so Brandon Ayuk, right? I think statistically it's hard to make this argument where you have an unproven round seven sophomore quarterback, not too much experience, maybe not totally healthy. And then you have so many hands to feed. You got the best pass catching running back of all time. You got one of the best pass catching tight ends of all time. You got Debo Samuel, who's one of the best after the catch guys, like guaranteed 8 targets per game just because of that. And so, you know, it's hard to see a ceiling based on that. And I'm not a film guy, but, you know, going back to my PFF days, like, I have a lot of friends who are brilliant film minds who have like made me look like a genius over the years. And this is a player, all of them, Brett Whitefield, especially, who's the GOAT, is saying, no, this is a top 5 wide receiver in the NFL. He gets open at will. He's sick after the catch. He's got speed. He's going to go nuclear this year. And so you're the reception perception guy. So you tell me if that's right and where are you at on him? Because I'll probably just steal your rankings and have the same.
you've come to the right place. I am the biggest Brandon Ayuk guy on planet Earth. I love this player, and I think he's a great example of like, okay, you rank him too high, you're going to take maybe a small loss on that if everybody stays healthy and all that type of stuff. But the gain is massive on him because he is that type of player. He's always been a reception perception star. Last year was absolutely his best season. 91st percentile success rate versus man coverage, 77.1%. Like, you go back and look at my historical database, Scott, and like all of the guys I've charted since 2014, basically anybody that's over 77%, like, is the stars of the league, right? Like, those guys have, when all of the circumstances come together, those guys have, like, they're Stephon Diggs, right? Back in Minnesota, he's putting up those success rate versus man coverage numbers, and it's like the exact same argument then. Like, no, I get the stats, like, aren't there. It's run heavy offense. This guy is an elite wide receiver. He's a top five wide receiver. He can be that guy if the circumstances all come together. And that's the same way I feel about Brandon Ayuk. He is absolutely that route runner. He is absolutely that player. I have questions about the circumstances. I think everybody has to have the questions about the circumstances. But for me, it's like, I'm going to rank him in a spot that I don't care if he doesn't finish as where I have him. I want you to, if you're using my rankings, like, I want you drafting Brandon Ayuk over guys that I don't think have that type of ceiling as players, period, regardless of how they project. So, yeah, you came to the right place for Brandon Ayuk love. I love Brandon Ayuk.
I'd love to hear that. Yeah, a testament to your reception perception thing, because all the smartest film people I know just can't stop hyping this guy up as a talent. And also, like, we're talking about, like, you know, wide range of outcomes, tough to rank. And like, what's tough to rank is like injuries. Like, we can't predict injuries, but, you know, Debo doesn't have the best injury history. George Kittle doesn't have the best injury history. And you think, like, when that happens, Brandon Ayuk has only ever been a fantasy superstar. And so he definitely has that to his range of outcomes as well.
Yeah, like, whenever we start talking about injuries, like, Ayuk, you know, knock on wood, can get hurt, right? Anybody can get hurt, but the guys there have had injury issues in the past. So I don't know. We'll see. Man, God, I love Brandon Ayuk. I'm so glad he got mentioned on this podcast. All right, my last one here, and then we can get out of here. Darren Waller. You know, you look at, like, the offense that the Giants ran last year. They were very conservative. They were very run heavy. And, like, I think that was good coaching, because their two best players on offense are Saquon Barkley and a run first quarterback in Daniel Jones. I love Daniel Jones fantasy this year. You know, you think about, like, okay, if this receiver core remake that they've had here works out, like, Darren Waller is the guy that they think he can be. They have a good inline tight end in Dan Bellinger too. Like, I think he's a pretty good option as well. I like Isaiah Hodgins. I think he gives him a solid answer as an X receiver. They have like 1,000 vertical stretch flanker players. They have 3,000 slot receiver options. If Brian Daboll and Mike Kafka now are more confident in opening the offense up, I think the biggest beneficiary here is Darren Waller. And you just look at, like, upside at tight end versus the field, it's hard not to rank Darren Waller as a guy that could be like a top five tight end. Where do you have Darren Waller ranked? And is there a spot where it's like, okay, you need to calm down with Darren Waller?
This feels like a trap, because, like, this is supposed to be players that you're like are difficult to rank, when all you did was just hype them up. And I feel the exact same damn way. Like, this is my Exodia tight end, which means he's like my must draft tight end. I don't want to leave a draft without him. It's like a super nerdy Yu-Gi-Oh reference where you just draft this player and then you automatically win. That is who Darren Waller is to me. He's going to be the wide receiver one for the New York Giants. This is the best wide receiver Daniel Jones has ever had, and he's going to be targeted as such so long as he stays healthy. That's the only question to me. Like, I see him finishing potentially as a fantasy wide receiver one. So obviously, upside off the charts at this devalued, less valuable position. So I'm all in on him. And you said you like Daniel Jones this year as well, and so do I.
Well, perhaps it was a trap, but you trapped me with the Ayuk thing. So, I mean, that was like, that's some research. After we talked, you know, Kadarius Toney and Christian Watson, like, all right, do we disagree there? We come to perfect harmony here as we end our list. And that's really, like, it's hard for me to rank Darren Waller because I'm really high on him. And, like, I don't want to look like a jackass with, like, a too high ranking on Darren Waller.
I have him tight end three.
Yeah, I have him.
Tied with TJ Hockenson. There's like,
yeah, I have met tight end four, and like same tier right there with TJ Hockenson.
That's just right. That's just the right answer, I think.
Yep, I think that is the right answer. All right, I love to hear it. Well, Scott Barrett, really appreciate your time today. Hopefully, if you people out there were struggling to rank these players and what to do with them, hopefully you got a little bit of help from us. And I know we definitely helped each other a little bit, kind of firm things up here. What can the people check out in terms of what you're working on right now and upcoming this season?
Yeah, check me out on Twitter at Scott Barrett DFB. Check out my website, fantasypoints.com. I have my biggest, most important article of the season dropping. That is Scott Barrett's 2023 draft plan. I update that every single day throughout the remainder of the season. You can find my rankings. You can find my Exodia running back and wide receiver, cats out of the bag on tight end. And yeah, thanks for having me, Matt.
Well, I can't wait to see who you have at the other positions, even though we did uncover the answer here at tight end. That's going to do it for this show. And we officially say goodbye to Rankings Week here in August. And next week, we say hello to Positional Preview Week. We're obviously going to be starting out with quarterbacks on Monday. Dalton Del Don will join me to preview the quarterback show. I'm going to see if we can get through the entire podcast without Dalton mentioning Trey Lance, even if it's in passing, even just mentioning Trey Lance. We'll see if we can pull it off. We also might have a special surprise for you starting next week as well. But, you know, I'm just going to leave that out there for now. Until then, we're out.